Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. This evening, I wanted to give a talk on one of my favorite subjects, favorite words in the whole Pali Canon, which was nibbida, and which basically means aversion. And it's not that you delight in aversion, but you delight in the results which that quality of nibbida brings to the mind. And it's this word I'm going to spin this evening's Dhamma talk around. Again, one of the reasons, as I was telling Ajahn Yana, that after the Patimokkha meeting the other day, which was just the day after the committee meeting we had with the members of the Buddhist Society, that nibbida was a very prominent characteristic of my mind. And developing that nibbida has some very beautiful meditations. And I'd like to talk about this point and how to develop it and where to focus it and how to delight in the results of nibbida as a great power to one's development of aloofness, separation of the mind from the world. And also as it instructs one about the meaning of this Dharma, where it's leading to, and the beauty of being free from this world. I don't know that many of you, but when I was a very young monk, that I even actually carried around this little booklet of the third Zen patriarch with those words at the beginning, which I sort of remember, like, the way is easy for one without any preferences or something like that. I don't remember it exactly, which actually I'm quite proud that I've forgotten most of that, because I thought that in this practice that was the goal and also the means to the goal, not having any preferences at all, as if like aversion and desire have no place even in the practice, as if that if you cultivate aversion or cultivate any sort of aversion or any sort of desire, that is a quality which will block freedom. However, that's not the way this path actually works. There is a place for desire and there is a place for aversion. In fact, you've got no choice about this. That for those who understand the meaning of anatta, of the fact there's no self, no chooser, no knower inside of this thing we call our body and mind. But these are just stages on the path which you will come across, which you can do nothing about, and which you should actually delight in. The stages which show the path bearing fruit and you're getting close to the goal. I've talked in earlier talks, this rains retreat, on like the place of desire, especially in the realm of the four Iddhipadas, especially the first, the Chanda Samadhi, the sustaining of the inclination, the desire to achieve the goal of meditation, the goal of practice, the liberation. Full liberation from, first of all, the liberation of the mind from the world of the senses, from karma loka, which in the sutras is called the low world, the hina dhatu, and to then liberate it from the higher realms, the rupa and arupa lokas. that this is a liberation which has to be done gradually, bit by bit. And that liberation of the mind from these realms of existence, it involves the arising of this quality called nibbida. It's as if that in the old simile of the wheel, that we're stuck on this wheel we call samsara, always rolling around the lives and deaths, the births and deaths, the many lives in samsara, then just equanimity is not enough to push us off that wheel. But somewhere along this we need the nibbida, the repulsion, which throws us, as it were, off this wheel. In particular, this word nibbida is something which comes up in your practice towards enlightenment. To actually understand the meaning of that word nibbida, that in one place where it's made very clear is in the Anguttara Nikaya in the nines. Which it's in the nines because this is where the Buddha describes the body as like being a sore, like a boil, with nine orifices. Out of each of the orifices is like pus and phlegm and blood oozing out. And he said in this simile, you can understand this simile as like the body with the nine orifices, with liquids and fluids sort of running out from time to time. And the fluids which run out are disgusting. Things which no one would really like or would value. And he said that you would get disgust towards like a boil which is oozing. You want to do something about it. You want to get rid of it, heal it, lance it or do something. Because that is the response which you can expect from having like a boil which is oozing just disgusting things. In the same way that simile of looking at the body is like a big boil, with these disgusting things coming out of each of the orifices. Then he said you should get nibbida towards the body. And so it's one quote amongst others where it's quite clear that this word nibbida is not dispassion, but it's a very quality which perhaps the best translation would be like aversion. Just as you'll be averse to a boil, which is smelly and disgusting, so one should be averse to many things which block one from being free. In particular in that sutta, you should develop nibbida towards the body. What do we actually mean by this body, nibbida towards this body? Very often that when we look upon the body, we look upon it in terms of the elements or the 32 parts. But I've mentioned here that one of the skillful ways for those who are doing meditation which leads to jhana is to look upon this body as just the five external senses. And to see just how this physical body of ours, the muscles and the bones and the blood, is all there basically to keep these five senses going. Now if there's any trauma to the body, any great sort of laceration or injury, then all the blood goes to the brain to keep the senses going. The legs are not really that important. Now the arms aren't all that important. Even the vital organs aren't as important to the body as like keeping sensory activity going. If you look upon the body this way, the body is here just to keep the senses going. And these five external senses are the body. When the Buddha talked about these senses, he called them the world. This is what we call karma loka. Now the world of sensuality, the five external senses, the body and the five senses connected to that body. And the body disappears. If you can really transcend that body and leave this body alone, so you won't take up body anymore, then you'll still be left with a mind if you're not an arahat. You go to the Sudarvasa, the pure abode of an anagami. You won't be bothered with the five external senses, but you'll be bothered still with the mind. However, we're going to start with just developing nibbida towards this body and the five senses, which are connected to this body. Very often the attachment to the body is not so much the attachment to the shape of your legs or your hair or whatever, or your nose, but it is very much the attachment to the sensations in the body, to the sights, the sounds, which are connected to this body. And this is where that I suggest you develop nibbida towards. It's like aversion to sensory experience. If you can just reflect on the nature of these five senses, the sounds, the sights, you see all of these things that are beyond your control. Whether it's the sight of huts, whether it's the sound of people in the committee meetings, whether it's the smells, the taste of the food, you understand that these things are completely beyond your control. They're a burden to you. However, most people in this world, they look upon this burden of the five senses as being something satisfying, something which if they can only manipulate and control and be smart enough, they can get the very most beautiful sights and sounds. They can move to beautiful places. They can go to places not too cold, not too hot. They can find ways of just heating their huts, cooling them in the summertime, having beautiful lakes to watch over, beautiful plants. But you know this is endless. There's no end to just the search for beauty in the outside. All that is beautiful and delightful will eventually fade away. The one time that I was really angry as a monk was in my fifth range retreat when I went to one of the last pieces of virgin forest in the northeast of Thailand by a range of mountains called Phu Wur in Nong Khai province. In that forest, after walking, this is my Tudong year, walking for many days, and those who know that part of the world will know it is dusty, dry, full of potato fields, with most of the trees cut down. And I was told by Ajahn Juan about this place, where there are elephants. In fact, the elephant had just come to that monastery the night before, and one of the lay people had come to tell Ajahn Juan about it. And Ajahn Juan, I remember, turned around to me. I just arrived at Phu Thorp, his main monastery, and asked if the Prapharang wanted to go and see an elephant. So I decided, yeah, I haven't seen one in a while before. But as soon as we walked into this forest, it was just so beautiful and delightful. It was like a virgin rainforest. It had never been sort of cut down. It had been as it was 30, 100, 200 years before I came in there. It was cool, it was fragrant. Just the air just changed immediately. You walk more than 10 meters inside of it. There were elephant droppings on the path, fresh ones. And because there's always something in flower, the air was fragrant. And I walked, maybe I think it was about 5 or 6 kilometers to the center of this little piece of jungle, where there was this amazing, like, little lake. Not a lake, a little lake, a big lake, and waterfalls and caves. And in those caves there were waterfalls, as the water just went through the cracks in the rocks. It was a delightful place, and there was a little sumlak there, a little place where monks who wished to be aloof from the world can go and practice. It was a delightful place for meditation. As soon as I went there, I fell in love with it. This was the place I was looking for to practice for the year. There were caves when it was hot, there was a beautiful lake there, and the village was 2 hours away. It was a long arms round, but it was worth it just to come back to this beautiful a glade on top of the mountain with water. However, when I was there, I was only there for about 6 weeks or 7 weeks, it was the villagers decided to burn that forest down. They set fire to it. The last piece of the forest, as far as I knew anyway, in the northeast. And I was really angry and upset. It was a good lesson to me, you know, to realize that the world outside, even the most beautiful, delightful scenery, the most delightful monastery I could imagine, it was just destroyed while I was there. My response at the time, because I was stupid, was anger. My response now is thanks to those villagers for giving me a very nice teaching. You cannot rely upon the world outside, the world of the five senses. In particular, that was just the realm of sight and smell, but also the realm of physical feelings, which is, in my opinion, the most burdensome of all these five senses. And it's very worthy of developing nibbida towards, this aversion, not to just painful feelings, not just to pleasant feelings, but the aversion to having feelings at all. This body is always a burden to you. If it's not a headache, it's a stomach ache, it's a knee ache, it's tiredness, it's too much energy, it's an aching bottom, an aching back. Whatever, however old you are, however fit you are, no matter how much you exercise or look after your diet, this body is basically a burden. It has itchiness in the throat, it has water in the eyes. It's always irritating from one point to another. You always have to scratch it, wash it, take it to the toilet, put food in its mouth. You lay it down and after a few minutes it's not comfortable anymore and you have to turn around. It's either too cold or too hot. In fact, every time you move, even blinking, even fidgeting the slightest amount, you're fidgeting because of the demands of the body, because of its inherent suffering, because it's a burden. If his body was not a burden, if he could find some happiness here, then the body would be still. You wouldn't need to move. Every movement, every wink of the eye, every scratch, every swallow in the mouth is always because of the dukkha in the body. The dukkha of physical feeling. People like to try and get beautiful food or beautiful sex or take heroin or whatever to try and overcome this inherent suffering in the body. Whether it's heroin or sex or whatever, whatever is overcome just for a few moments, and it's worse afterwards. The ache, the pain. This is why that anyone who sees the nature of the five senses should be able to know them as something which are inherently dukkha. If you see them as they truly are, the yathābhūta jñāna dasana, seeing these things just as they truly are, with insight, with accurate perception, it's enough to turn you away from these things, to turn you off these things, to gain nibbida to this world of the five senses, and also everything connected with them. I'm talking about everything connected with the world of the five senses. The world of the five senses just starts with my body, but it goes out from there into the kuti in which I rest in. It is the books on my shelf, it is the papers on my desk, it is the tea in my cup, it is the world outside my hut, the monastery, the block chimney, the telephone, and all of that business. It is the world outside the monastery, the Buddhist society, the committee, the duties, Thailand, India, the whole world, that's the realm of the five senses. Just like the body, it just keeps on disturbing again and again and again, and it's endless. There's no end to that world. It just goes on. It can go on not just for this lifetime, lifetime after lifetime. You never settle anything that way. Isn't it time to try and have some nibbida to that world? The result of nibbida is when there's aversion to these things, it turns away and that world disappears. If it is true nibbida, it is the cause of these things disappearing, ceasing. If you still have some hope of finding any satisfaction, any happiness, any fulfillment, any meaning in that world of the five senses, then you won't let them go. It's very much because you can't let that world go that you end up just maybe on the door to jhanas, but never going through. Never knowing the release from that world. I was just reading just today about the obstacles to jhanas. It's one of the suttas in the Anguttara Threes. Where the it's that simile, I think Venerable Bappa was talking to me about it a week or two ago, about the simile of refining gold. And this is the, what in Buddhism is called the adichitta sikha. It's a training in the, what they call that higher mind, higher thought. Just as you've got the training in adisila, in the higher morality, which is basically like sense restraint. And the higher mind is the practice of jhanas. And he was saying like the gross obstacles, upakalesas, that's the word I'm using for obstacles here, the gross obstacles for jhanas, the medium obstacles, the subtle obstacles, and what is a very beautiful little teaching by the Lord Buddha, the lingering obstacle to jhana. The gross obstacles are just bad conduct of body, speech and mind. That's a gross obstacle. Anyone who hasn't sort of developed skillful, good conduct of body and speech, there's no way they're going to enter a jhana. Even like bad conduct of mind as well, they're not going to enter a jhana. You've got to purify the body, speech and mind. They're the gross obstacles, but I wanted just to talk about the medium obstacles to jhana. And if I can remember them now, it's just like the first one was like karma vitakka, which is like the thought of the world of the five senses. But sometimes that you can put the body in a nice posture. Now you've got your kuti all settled. You know, you fed the body, you've got everything sort of right, finished all your business, all your duties in the monastery, and you sit down and you start thinking about sensual things. By sensual things, I don't mean like sexual fantasies. Just anything which is concerned with the world. Whether it's thinking about the letter you have to write next, whether it's thinking about the telephone call you have to make, thinking about when you're going to have your shower, thinking about the huts to be built, where you're going to build them. Whatever is concerned with the world outside is karma vitakka. These are the thoughts which can obstruct the other two of the middle obstacles, the Majjhima Upakalesa, Vyapada vitakka and Vihiṃsa vitakka, the thoughts of like ill will and cruelty. And these are middle obstacles to the adichittasika, the training in the higher mind. I think for many monks, it's probably that karma vitaka is one of the main obstacles, still concerned with the body, with aches, pains, with itches or whatever. It is why in the development of the meditation on the breath, I make such a strong point of trying to abandon the perception of the body as soon as you can in your practice of meditation. If you want to locate the breath on some part of the body, do that okay, but give it up sooner or later. The earlier the better. Because if you have any awareness of the body, even if it's just the tip of your nose, that is a line, a connection to the whole of your body. The sense of touch, physical touch, hasn't been abandoned at all. And you find that if you're aware of the tip of your nose, you're open to be aware of the ache in your knee, open to be aware of the feeling saliva in your throat, the itch in your nose if you have hay fever, the ache in your back. The whole body is open to disturb you. As soon as you close that door to the body, the better. And not just close the door to the body, but the thoughts connected to the body as well. All that karma vitaka has to be abandoned. It's interesting, some of the other refined upakalesas, it's like thoughts about your family. That's a refined upakalesa. Called maybe refined because it doesn't seem to be unwholesome. Sometimes you think that's your duty. The Buddha's saying that this is an upakalesa, an obstacle, a refined defilement of the mind. It stops you getting into deep meditation. The other two are interesting, but I'll just pass over them. It's thoughts about the world, the countryside, the people in the countryside. The last one is thoughts about pride. These things are like refined obstacles. But one of the interesting obstacles, upakalesa, in this list is what they call the lingering one, which is dhamma vitaka. Where at this stage of the meditation, when you're developing the adichitta, the refined mind, you're developing the jhanas. So often that people can just start thinking about points of dhamma. It's the mind is just still not willing to let go. It's just hanging on to that last lingering defilement of the mind. In regard to the goal of your meditation, to liberate the mind, at this point, at this stage, the dhamma vitaka is an obstacle, is an upakilesa. Leave all of that alone. If you notice these things as upakilesa, as obstacles, as defilements, if you truly know them as defilements, if you truly know what they're taking away from you, then the result, the automatic result, will be nibbida towards these things. In the sense of aversion towards wrong conduct by body, speech and mind. The sense of aversion to thoughts concerning the world of the five senses. Thoughts of anger or ill will, an aversion to that. An aversion to thoughts about one's family, the country, or things of pride. Even a nibbida to thoughts about the Dhamma. This is nothing to do with you having aversion to something else. This is just the nature of the mind, who knows that these things are like a boil with orifices oozing disgusting things. And it's the nature of the mind to turn away from these things. Again and again in the suttas, the Buddha said, the result of nibbida Well, first of all, nibbida is the result of seeing things as they truly are. And the result of nibbida is the fading away of these things, viraga. If you have nibbida to the world of the five senses, to your body, to your duties and responsibilities in the world, you have nibbida even to thinking about the Dhamma, you'll find that you'll be free from these things. These obstacles which can obsess you in the gateway into jhanas will just disappear, they will fade. When you have nibbida towards that world, when they start to fade, instead of that world appearing, you're just left with the mind. As I think I mentioned last week, what you're left with is the pabbasara citta. Because that mind, once it starts to appear as a, what I often call like the nimitta of the mind, appears like usually radiant, beautifully radiant, powerfully radiant. Pabbasara. This is just how the mind recognizes the mind. When it's free, free from the world of the five senses. You have to develop that nibbida, first of all, before you can enter these jhanas. We just chanted on Monday night the Tayana Gata. This was the verses of this deva called Tayana. I may pronounce that wrong, but many of you know what I'm talking about. And it begins the verses, Chinda Sotang Parakama. Cut the stream through effort. Kame Panuda Brahmana, like meditator. Get beyond the world of karma, the world of the five senses. Napahaya Muni Kame, without abandoning sage, without abandoning, O sage, this world of the five senses. Nekata Upa. Nekatamu papajati. You can't attain to this oneness of mind. You have to cut that realm of the five senses to be able to gain this release of that oneness of mind. The liberation where there's just mind and nothing else. Where you truly come to a singleness of perception instead of this complexity of the perception which so obstructs and burdens us. Also, you have that beautiful simile of the wet sappy stick, one of the Buddha's most beautiful similes. The wet sappy stick, just a person wants to make this fire and he's already got his dry stick and he needs one more stick. He finds one in a river. He takes that stick up and uses it as his second stick. He said he can't get any fire at all. It's a wet and sappy stick just taken from the river. Another person comes along looking for fire, and this time they get a stick which isn't in the river but which is on the bank of the river, close enough to still be sappy and moist. He tries to get fire with that and still can't. There's just too much moisture in there. Even though it's not sodden like the stick which is drawn from the river, it's still moist enough to be impossible to heat up and to burn. Now the word for burn is jayati. Same as a word to do jhanas. But then he goes a long way away from the bank of the river. And a long way away from the bank of the river, there he picks up a stick which is dry without any sap. And that stick, with that stick, you can get a fire. Jhana. In that simile, if a person is plunged into the world of the five senses, the stream, then there's no way that you can get any jhana going. Just the mind is just too wet and soggy. with its concern for sensuality, for sensual pleasure, sensual satisfaction, sensual comfort. Remember, even like scratching yourself is a search for sensual comfort. If a person has left the world, joined a monastery, or just come for a range retreat, if they still entertain thoughts of sensuality, fantasies, dreams, thoughts of beautiful food, beautiful women, songs, or whatever, if you entertain thoughts of these things, you are like the stick which is out of the river but still lying close by. It's by the bank of the river. You've still got sap inside your mind. You may try and sort of get fire. You can get close, but you can't get right in there. Your stick isn't dry enough. You've taken the mind out of the sensory world by becoming a monk. But you haven't moved it away far enough yet. It's only when you're a long way away, then you can find fire. Then your mind is dry of the concern for the sensory world. You move the mind away through this nibbida. Just reflect upon this world of the five senses. Use asupa, not just on the physical body, but on its sensory apparatus. So you feel disgusted with having to see, having to listen, having to smell, having to taste. Disgusted with having to have a body which has to feel all the time. And if you have that disgust, that aversion to these senses, you'll find you'll move them away. You'll only tolerate them as much as is necessary for your physical survival. But you won't go further than that. As long as you've got a hut which is suitable just to protect you. As long as you've got enough food to keep you going for another day. Robes just to cover you. Keep you decent. That's enough. You're not going to take it further than that. As long as a monastery is good enough for practice, leave all the huts and the improvements till after the range retreat. It's good enough. What am I building this monastery for anyway? Is it just to have a beautiful monastery so that people can come here and tell me how nice my monastery is? Or is it just so that I can have the seclusion to do the job which the Buddha asked of us? Of course, you know the answer to that one. So you develop aversion towards all of these things. And the more you develop nibbida towards your family, thoughts of your family, thoughts of the body, the sensory world, or whatever, then as you meditate, you're taking your mind a long way away from the river of sensuality, moving it away. Your mind becomes dry. When your mind becomes dry from the world, when you attend to the breath, the mind leaps towards the meditation object. It leaps towards it just as it would leap away from something disgusting. Sorry, just talking to someone the other day about a Punxsutawe cloth. One of the real Punxsutawe cloths, which was taken from a body of, it was actually Ajahn Chah's brother who died. And it was actually wrapped around him, and he was oozing, and he was disgusting in his smell. Remember, they opened the coffin, and a lot of monks, this was the first year I was at Wat Pa Phong, they opened the coffin. And as soon as they opened the coffin, all the monks standing around, even the monks, they retreated about 10 meters because the stench was just gross. It was sickening. So that's the body. And if you can have such nibbida, you would actually retreat not 10 meters, not 10 miles, but 10,000 miles away from the world of the five senses. And in that retreat, you come very close to the mind. The more you develop nibbida to the world of the five senses, just the closer you come to the samadhi nimitta of the mind, the beautiful bright mind. And you'll go into that bright mind. And you'll have viveka japiti sukha. The piti sukha, the bliss which is born of being aloof, separated from the world of the five senses. Vivichehi kamehi. Aloof, separated, way beyond the world of the five senses is a description of the first jhana. But the five senses are completely subdued to the point they're like switches turned off. And they're not active. The eye doesn't see, the ear doesn't hear, the nose doesn't smell, nor does the tongue taste, and the body doesn't feel anything at all. That is an enormous relief. It's like retreating away from a stinking body. If you can retreat away like that, you'll find the bliss of the mind. You'll have a mind which experiences its release. It's a citta vimutti. Only a temporary release, but still something which is really wonderful to experience. When you experience this, you know why nibbida has happened. It is the nature of the world of the five senses to be disgusting, to be dukkha, to be suffering. It's not some sort of negativity of a monk who is just really weird and who has got some problem. But it's just the nature of the mind to do this. It's part of the path. And if it happens to you, just welcome it as a beautiful sign that some things are happening, that wisdom is actually occurring. This is not wisdom which you work out. It's not things which you think. It actually goes against your thinking. Because I said I used to carry that book around me. I thought that was a great sutta, that sutta of the third Zen patriarch. But I threw it away after a while and forgot it. Even the yama I carried it in, I eventually threw away and burnt. This aversion is something which is part of the path, and it leads to the blissful abidings. And these blissful abidings are the first taste of the Dhamma. After you can experience some of these jhanas, which is just a matter of time for each one of you. Again, I keep on stressing in all these talks which I give, it's a natural path. You haven't got any choice in it. The more you get involved, you just simply obstruct yourself, obstruct the path. Just follow the instructions. Just allow these things to happen. You're being conditioned. The mind is doing this not because that you decide to do so, but all the areas down from the time of the Buddha, it's their influence. This is what happens. Eventually the nibbida arises and it gives rise to this freeing of the mind. Once you can develop this degree of nibbida and the freedom which results from it, you can also appreciate the sutta which we just chanted, which also mentions nibbida in the sense that seeing that each one of these five khandhas, not the upadana khandhas, said just ordinary khandhas, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, and vijnana, the consciousness. Each one of these, when it's seen as they truly are, as anicca, as impermanent, yam panani chang dukhang wa, sorry, sukhang wa tang dukhang wa ti, whichever way around it is. These things are impermanent. What is impermanent? Is that dukkha or sukha? It's dukkha. What is dukkha? Is that fit to be unchangeable? Is that fit to be regarded as me and mine, as a self? No hetang bante, no venerable sir. Because it's anicca, because it's anatta, it's a burden, apadaya, sangvatati. It turns towards being a great burden, an affliction. Whether it's rupa, whether it's vedana, whether it's sanya, whether it's sankara, whether it's vijnana, each one of the five khandhas. And the Buddha doesn't make any bones about it when, in the last section of that talk, he says it doesn't matter what type of khanda, whether past, present or future, internal or external, gross or refined, far or near, all rupa, all vedana, all sanya, all sankara, all vijnana, anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent, suffering, a pain, a boil, a dart, an anatta, not me, not mine, not a self. And having seen this in that last beautiful passage, that the person feels nibbida towards rupa, towards the body, and all the other material things, feels nibbida towards vedana, towards this aspect of every type of consciousness, every sense base, which is either pleasant or painful or in between. You've had the lot. You're fed up with a lot of it. You have no hope of just trying to control this vedana just to try and find pleasure and trying to limit the pain. You know that that's just a futile task. You just want to get rid of the whole of vedana, all of the sense bases which produce vedana. Remember from the Paticca-samuppada, the pension origination, it's because of salayatana, the six sense bases. That's why we get pasa, that's why we get vedana. If you have a sense base, you've got to get vedana. You're just dropping the whole lot. It's enough to feel nibbida towards vedana, nibbida towards perception, nibbida towards all sankara, nibbida towards consciousness itself. If you truly develop nibbida towards vijnana, then vijnana ceases. That's what happens. The result of nibbida is viraga, the fading away, nirodha, ceasing of everything. That's why when I come across the word nibbida, it's just a beautiful word. A word which I carry around with me and reflect upon and use it as an attitude towards the stages in early meditation to develop that freedom. Do you want freedom? Do you want release? Or do you want to still be in the bonds of samsara, running around again and again and again? Fortunately, there are Aryans in the world, there are teachers who can encourage this nibbida, which encourage the freedom, the fading away of things, and the viraga. You've got nothing to lose except defilements, except suffering. Only suffering exists, and suffering passes away. It's about the blooming time it passed away. That's the end of my talk. Has anyone got any comments or something to say about the talk this evening? Okay.